because I got some things to talk about with Herb Weisbaum. He's a contributing editor at checkbook.org, and, you know, he's the consumer man, and he's probably consuming some things as we speak, as we get him on the air right now. Are you consuming something, the consumer man?
Well, I actually consumed some fabulous music last night, and I have a hello for you from somebody who knows you. So I'm going to give you a couple of clues back when you were John Records, Landecker, or Mr. Boss Jock.
Okay.
One of the top 100 drummers of all time, according to Rolling Stone magazine.
Danny is a is his name again? Is his first name Danny?
Yeah, and his last name is Seraphine, the late drummer of Chicago, which is playing that music you were listening to there.
That's right. Great drummer.
Danny is 75 years old now. He did 2 hours and 10 minutes of nonstop power drumming with his group. He had one of the former lead singers and bass guitarists of the old Chicago days. That's Jeff Coffey. And they played, they're called now, he calls his group CTA, the original name of the group.
Right.
And he played one hit. He played one hit after another, and I got to meet him backstage, and he was the nicest guy in the world. And I said, I'm on with Landecker every week on WG. And he goes, oh, my God, say hello to John for me. That's an exact quote.
Look at you, Herb, out there rocking. The consumer man's getting down with the tunes, everybody.
Well, you know, I was a boss jock in the old days, so, you know, come on.
You know, you people in the Midwest don't. That whole boss jock thing, you and I should discuss that some other time.
That was Philadelphia when you were there.
No,
yeah, okay.
I wasn't a boss jock in Philadelphia either. That's a whole West Coast thing. I've never understood it anyway. What the hell is a boss jock?
No, WFIL in Philadelphia, where I grew up, and you worked in that city for a while.
Were
we were
jocks?
The boss jocks, and I drove around in the with a boss bus and the boss chicks. 1971 and 72 when I was in college.
I've never understood that cliche. I just don't get it.
It just worked.
Okay. I agree to disagree, boss jock. They're more like they're employees. They're not bosses. Okay, anyway.
Funny.
All right, Herb. So now you see why I asked you to stay after the bottom of the hour?
Because we have a lot of fun together.
Yeah, well, it's 12 minutes after 7 already. I know you've got two big things you want to talk about, and we should because you're the consumer man, and these are very important and helpful, and people should pay attention to it. And I have to give you my scam report.
Absolutely.
All right. I'm going to give you the scam report right now.
All right.
Ever since Herb has been educating all of us about scammers, I don't know if they've always been there and I just never noticed, or since Herb mentioned them, I see them all the time. Well, not all the time, but I've got two, okay?
Uh-huh.
I have a Chase card, and Chase security is really good.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a text from them saying they have stopped payment because they feel it might not be something I ordered. You know, and if it is, just tell them yes. And if it isn't, say no. And so I said no, and I'm getting a new card. But this was from somebody called Battalionofent. BattalionofEnt.net for like $40.
Right.
And so I looked them up online, and I still don't know what they do, except have a lot of graphics and tell you how they're going to help you with whatever you need, maximum satisfaction and efficiency, expert staff. But apparently they have allegedly run this scam thing with other people, where mm-hmm. where this $30 or $40 thing just shows up,
right?
And I was glad that Chase said that. I'm glad I didn't spend the money. But the first thing that crossed my mind was I got to tell Herb.
I got to tell Herb about this scam. Now, there are times when your bank will email you with my credit card. I've gotten things before. I bought two things at the exact same price back to back. I made them separate purchases for some reason. And they'll write me a note and say, hi, we noticed this was a little weird. And did you really do it? Contact us. Or I had one where I had a coupon for a restaurant. So I left a tip that was ridiculously big if you look at the price of the rest of the meal. But it was because most of it was paid by. And they said, did something weird happen here? I mean, the algorithms are pretty good. And you can contact the bank. And it's, you know, if everything's fine, don't bother, and if there's a problem, call us. But just clicking on a link, and especially I talked to you and you're good, look at where it's coming from.
Right.
You know, if you're getting something that says your social security account has been logged from Bob's Cleaning Supply Company.com, you know, that's a dead giveaway, you know, right? They've hacked somebody else's email on what they've done, and they're using that to send these things
right.
out.
I got one more. This one was okay. This one's even better. This allegedly was from Venmo, telling me that Elizabeth A. Vaquez requests $98.99 in cryptocurrency, and the amount will be deducted every month from my account, although I don't have any cryptocurrency. Okay?
You have cryptocurrency.
I don't have any of that.
And no, plus, right.
You know, so, and then it says up here, it's from Venmo at Venmo.com, but it's to no reply 04 at Cormick.WilsonI.shop, whatever the hell that is.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So these are all scaremongering. They're trying to get you to act quickly because you're afraid. As you know, you click on the link, and thankfully, didn't you either go wind up with a scammer, or they'll download malicious software on your device. So good for you, Brandon. Give him a gold star.
You know, listen, I'm sure there's other people are getting the same thing. You know, and I think it's good to talk about it because you don't usually hear people go on the air and go, "Hey, you know, I got this scam thing, and people trying to get cryptocurrency from me, and I don't have any of that." You know.
My sister-in-law today called me. She got a call from Medicare telling her that there was a problem with her account. She said, Medicare doesn't make calls to people. Thank you. Because she knew I was very proud of you, Betty. Way to go.
That's right. That's right. See?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's her. And he's going to teach us some more when we come back after this on 720 WGN. Tall. Okay. He's the consumer man. We're going to talk about supplements, pills, right?
So Grace got it right. She got right.
So I thought I'd throw a little white rabbit at you. So to speak. I was reading the article, man. This is really good stuff.
Yeah, it was based on a podcast we did, and recently a Consumerpedia podcast, the last one. And so many people, John, take nutritional supplements. We spend about $51 billion a year on them. And according to a survey by the trade group that represents these folks, the Council for Responsible Nutrition, more than half the adults in the country, 55%, take a supplement regularly. And most of the respondents, 74%, including those who don't take supplements, said they trust the dietary supplement industry. And the experts we talked to said that trust is really not earned. So let me start out by saying there's nothing wrong with taking some supplements. If you talk to your doctor about what you're taking, if you know what you're getting, and you don't believe a lot of the hype and are not misled, and you're a careful shopper. I take a vitamin D every day because I went to my doctor and had a blood test, and because I live in Seattle, land of no sunshine, I am low in vitamin D, so I take a vitamin D pill every day. Multiple vitamin for most people is not going to hurt you. Most of us don't need it. You're probably wasting your money, but that's fine if you want to take that. We're talking about all this other stuff that people are taking willy-nilly, and because they all the advertising, the claims, they make them sound so wonderful. So the one expert I started on the podcast with is a great friend of mine, Dr. John Swartzberg. John is the head of the editorial board at the University of Berkeley Wellness Letter. He has been my radio doctor for 22 years, and we've become very, very good friends. He's not an alarmist. The UC Berkeley Wellness Letter calls it as it is and lets people make up their own mind. And he told me that he's very concerned about nutritional supplements because there's so many misunderstandings about it. And here's part of what he told us on the Consumerpedia podcast.
People have a lot of misconceptions about supplements. For example, people think that the FDA approves supplements and they don't. They believe that if the label says that this supplement has a certain amount of a certain chemical, that they can trust that. You can't necessarily. They believe that the word natural on supplements means that the product is safe. That doesn't have anything to do with safety or efficacy. And speaking of efficacy, most people believe that supplements have been tested for both safety and efficacy, and they aren't. There's so many misconceptions out there. These products are unregulated. I think people, to a large extent, are taking their own health in their own hands, but they may be doing themselves harm with some supplements.
And if you look at the bottom of the labels, it always says in teeny tiny print, this claim or product has not been approved by the Food and Drug Administration, which either people ignore or they don't ever read. So there's a lot of Wild West stuff going on here with these nutritional supplements, John, and I think people really need to be aware of that, and that's what we're trying to do with this article we just wrote.
And not only that, but it's the twisting of words. It's someone manufacturing these things and labeling it in a manner that avoids, just skirts the legality of saying what they're really not saying. Okay, like there's nothing that says in this article you talk about supports healthy immune system or natural immune booster, right?
Right. Right. You can't say things that are a body function that a drug would do.
Right.
You can't say, for instance, like helps you not have a heart attack, but you can say supports heart health. You can't say prevents, you can say helps with mood, your mood, but it can't say prevents depression. So those are the word games they use. They also use, and that was allowed by this law that was passed by Congress 30 years ago. Senator Orrin Hatch from Utah, home of Herbalife, got this through Congress to deregulate the industry. So basically, the FDA is only involved if there's a problem. If somebody gets hurt with this stuff, 23,000 people a year go to the emergency room related to something they took as a nutritional supplement, or if it's making people sick, it's contaminated, then the FDA gets involved. Otherwise, there's no checks. There's no testing to make sure you're getting what you asked for. There's no test that it's not contaminated.
But
some of these products have been contaminated.
It says on the package, clinical studies.
Right. Well, that good point. Yes. And that sells a lot of products, clinical proven or clinical studies. That's right. So here's Caitlin Dow. She is with the Center for Science and the Public Interest. They point fingers at all these claims and products. And here's what she had to say about those clinically proven, clinically tested claims. Go ahead, Caitlin.
It's almost comical how bad the research on some of these is. Just because something has been tested doesn't mean the science was well done. So companies might fund a study that maybe doesn't have a placebo group, which makes the study useless, or they measure something that doesn't matter. They might skip the statistics altogether. Sometimes they publish it in a low-tier journal, which they pay for that article to be published, so that they can slap it on their website and say that their product was clinically tested. And look, we have the study to prove it. It just doesn't necessarily mean anything.
Linguistic loopholes.
Yeah, I was just looking at that.
Yeah. I know we're getting close to the news, so I just want to make
sure. No, we got like 5 minutes.
Okay.
And I also wanted to point out one of the great things in your article is that these are, but the FDA does not classify, these are not classified as, this isn't medicine.
They're not classified as drugs.
This is food.
That's right.
That's
this bill that was
food.
That's this bill that was passed 30 years ago.
That's a big, that's a gift.
We call that a loophole. Yeah.
A loophole. This is food, not drugs. So they don't have to have the drug rules and regulations that this country has. They just put this thing out there and say whatever they want.
But people sure use them as drugs, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah,
and
that's the problem.
They're manufactured to look like drugs.
Right, exactly. Exactly right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So what I wanted to point out was, and that ties into what you were just saying, if you're going to take these things, I want to leave you with two tips. First of all, the safe way to do it is A, talk to your doctor, and B, you look for a seal on the package. So again, nobody's pre-testing these things. You know, before a prescription drug comes to market, they have to prove it's safe, they have to prove it's effective, and there are quality random checks to make sure there's no contamination. None of that takes place with herbal supplements. So if you look for one of these three seals, Consumer Lab, USP, which is a U.S. Pharmacopeia, or NSF, the NSF International Foundation, you can trust that at least what they say is on the bottle is in the package. You will get the what is contained. You will not get more or less, because if it's less, it wouldn't do anything. If it's more, you can overdose, and that's happened with lots of testing that's being done. You can be sure that it's free of contaminants. Some of these things have been contaminated with drugs like Speed. Some of the weight loss products have had Speed, and some of the Viagra-like herbs have had Viagra. These things aren't supposed to have drugs because they're not drugs, but they make them overseas and they put drugs in them, and that you'll also know that it disintegrates fast enough to enter the bloodstream. A real drug has to be tested to make sure it just doesn't pass through your stomach. These are tested to make sure they dissolve in your stomach and it could at least do something. And the reason why you want to see your doctor is because these do things and interact with the prescription drugs you may be taking. And it can be harmful. St. John's Wort, a very popular supplement, it can interfere with a whole bunch of crucial medications, antidepressants, birth control pills, blood thinners like warfarin, which so many people are on, statins, including simvastatin, which I'm on, some heart medications, including digoxin, and some HIV drugs, and ginkgo biloba, again, another popular supplement. It can interfere with anticoagulants, blood thinners, which could lead to a stroke or a heart attack if it gets messed with, and it can be unsafe to take when you're during pregnancy. I mean, these things have effects. They can have compounding effects with the drugs you take. You need to let your doctor know that you're taking these and make sure there's no interaction with anything you're taking, at the very least, if you're going to take a supplement.
You know, I would never, it's just me, but I would never take anything that called itself St. John's wort. I mean, it's just like, why am I taking something that it calls itself a wart? And who the heck, and who the heck is St. John? And why do I want to sample his warts? I mean,
must have had a lot of frogs. That's all I can say.
What a bizarre name. I don't know where that comes from, obviously.
But, I don't. But I'd encourage you, if you're interested in this, the article is on checkbook.org, but it's also embedded in this as the podcast, where we talk to these experts for 30 minutes, and they have a lot more information, all the games that are being played and how you can be safe if you're going to use these things. And so many people are taking them. You really have to stop and think. And, you know, people always say, well, it's natural herb. And I said, you know, strychnine's natural and it can kill you. Natural does not mean it's safe. Right?
Exactly. You know, I would think we would have learned that by now.
Well, you know.
Because, I mean, that applied to the food industry, too, being able to say whether or not something was natural or not. And I think it was sort of a wild, wild west there as far as labeling was concerned, at least in the beginning, until somebody somewhere, Food and Drug Administration or someone, said, now, hold on a second.
There's still very little regulation in natural. Natural is one of those that gets me to buy words because I think it's better, you know?
Yeah, right. Cool. Yeah. Well, it has to be. It's natural.
Yeah, it's natural, right. Of course.
She's about a mover, says obviously she's about a mover.
Awesome.
I mean, yes. Well, I don't know if it's awesome, but it worked. It worked.
It was boss. Okay. So this is the season, you know. Everybody's moving if they're going to move. The kids are out of school. And what we just wrote a story of that we wanted to warn people that there are two reasons why you really need to be careful when you hire a mover. Reason number one is by shopping around, you can save a lot of money. And I'll give you some price quotes in a minute. And number two, because you don't want to get stuck with a rogue mover. This industry, unfortunately, has been there are parasites in the industry that take advantage of people, and they take their money and then they ship their stuff. And then when it gets to the other end of the line, they say to them, oh, there was this extra charge we didn't tell you about, and you owe us $3,000, $4,000 in cash by tomorrow. And if you don't come up with it, we will either put your stuff in storage, not tell you where it is, or we're just going to sell your stuff. And I've talked to people who have had that happen to them, and they've had to come up with the money because there's no real regulatory people around to deal with this kind of stuff on that kind of a spot basis. And it's your stuff and you want it back. And so these thieves, these robbers, actually extort you to pay the money. So they use your stuff as a they hold it hostage to extort you. So that's why you really got to be careful.
Now, without naming names, unless you want to, of course, I mean, I would hope that the well-known moving companies wouldn't fall under the type of thing that you're talking about.
The well-known moving companies would not in general fall under this, but you know, your names, like anything else, can be deceiving. So what you want to do is the big tip to be careful about, and then we'll get back to price shopping, to avoid the scam, is if you're going online, you don't know where to start, and you're Googling mover or moving or something like that, odds are you are going to wind up with a moving broker. These are companies that pose as local outfits. They're just middlemen that usually don't own or operate any trucks or even employ any movers. They simply collect a deposit from customers and then try to sell them your job for another moving company to take. So when they take the money and run and they're gone and you're stuck with whatever moving company shows up, if they even do show up, you could be left holding the bag. And that's where we were seeing a lot of problems with these things. So if you got to start with a local moving company, like look for a local mover, and I'm going to give you in a minute the URL your friends can hear use on WGN to find out which ones they want to go with. If you discuss a move with the company and they can't provide you a local address, they can't tell you where they park their trucks at night, they can't send somebody to your house to prepare a written estimate, big red flags, you may be dealing with a dishonest broker and you want to be really, really careful. So the two tips are never pay a big deposit because you don't want to give them any more money than you have to. And for a local move, you shouldn't have to give them anything. And number two, make sure you check check out the company and you're not using a broker and you're not getting one of these rogue movers. And the way you can at least start is, you know, our ratings are for subscribers only in the Chicagoland area, but because we love you, we're going to give you a free link. So if your listeners go to checkbook.org/WGN Radio/movers, for 30 days, you can take a look at the results for movers in the greater Chicagoland area. Checkbook.org/WGN Radio/movers. We did undercover shopping, John, for the pricing. The ratings came from our members and subscribers who were in that area, which leads me to the pricing. I was surprised to see how much the price can really differ for the exact same job. So our undercover shoppers priced some jobs out here where I live in the Seattle area, and this was to move a 4-bedroom house within Renton, Washington, a suburb of Seattle. That's where they make all the airplanes, in Renton. And the price quote ranged from $1,800 to more than $4,000 within a city move, a little tiny city outside of Seattle, within that one area. When they priced the move from Seattle to Washington, D.C., they were quoted prices ranging from $10,500 to $27,000. I am not good at math, but that's a big difference. Yeah, that is a huge difference. So, and let me give you for the Chicagoland area. We did pricing there too. So this is a move for no packing, a 4-bedroom house from Arlington Heights to Schaumburg. I assume you know where they are.
Sure, we do.
Okay, I know Schaumburg. But anyway, so this is no packing. We're just going to come and take everything packed, a 4-bedroom house, and from between one city and the other. The rates range from $800 to $3,000. I believe the $800 is probably ridiculously low. And by the way, sometimes, you know, scam guys price it real low so they can try to hit you up for more money afterwards. But that gives you some range of how much we're talking about to do these things. A big, big price difference.
Yeah. And in the article, too, you know, we've been talking about the movers, but, you know, as the movee, I guess, the person who's moving, so to speak.
Yeah.
You talk about analyzing what your real needs are. And so throw out, recycle, donate, or sell anything you can live without.
Do it on the front end.
Wait a minute.
Yes.
Have you ever tried that?
My wife believes in sweet as death cleaning. You clean till you die or something, whatever. I don't know. But you know, you try to get rid of it on the front end as opposed to the back end where you're paying for the move. Some of these good companies have moving consultants that they can help you. For instance, when I moved from Syracuse, where I went to college, to Seattle back in 1981, I emptied out all the drawers in my dresser and put all the clothes in boxes and then, you know, et cetera. Well, nowadays they say to you, no, leave all the clothes in the dresser. We got this big wrap kind of stuff, and we wrap the drawers and they're all stay in place and stabilized, and it's the kind of stuff you can buy if you go to like a storage center. They have these big rolls of saran wrap, and then you don't have to spend all the time unpacking your stuff. A lot of people make trouble for themselves where they don't tell the mover everything they want to move when they make an estimate. The only way you're going to get a good estimate is to indicate anything. And also, if you can get, you know, if you don't need that piano, sell it because it's heavy and you're going to be paying to move that piano. And then be ready when they show up. People actually are there. We didn't finish packing. We're having our breakfast. Could you come back? No, they can't come back in 2 hours. You got to be ready when they tell you they're going to show up. So those are things we can do to help cut the costs as well.
Yeah, you really have to be, what I got out of your article, and I've thought this a long time, like a lot of things in life, you have to be proactive if
Correct.
You want to make sure that it's getting done. And that means in this particular situation, and according to what you guys have written, the manifest, for lack of a better term, the list of things that are being put on this moving van, they are itemized, and you see them when they take off, and then you're there when they arrive, and you take a look at the same itemized list and make sure that what got on the trucks stayed on the truck for the move. I mean,
yes.
It takes a little extra time, but, you know, you've got to do it. I mean,
and if you're not there when you show up at the other place and then they don't know where to put the stuff,
right?
Or if you didn't tell them there's 12 steps up to the new place and that's not factored in, they can legally, you know, ask you for some more money. A lot of people get, you know, with the big moves, interstate moves, you know, that can be, where do you start? And I asked my boss, Kevin Brassler, who wrote this article, and he's an expert on this, and he said, contact one of the good local moving companies in the Chicago area, and then if it's only a couple of states, they may decide they want the business and take do the move to a couple of states away and then just run the truck back empty because it's worth the money. Or right. they may at least get you packed up right, started, and then hook you up with the other trucks that will take it along the way rather than just throwing a dart at a dartboard. That's at least a good way to start. I thought that was a very good bit of advice.
Anything else you want to add about moving before I turn it over to you to plug your stuff?
Just be careful and remember if the rates, if it seems ridiculously low, you know, just be skeptical and be careful. And, you know, you don't, it normally comes with basic insurance, which is by weight, few cents per pound. If you got expensive stuff, buy the insurance because things break all the time. And if you have this, and if it's really precious, maybe you can take it yourself if it's that valuable because things do get stolen. And if it can't be replaced, then don't put it on the truck if you possibly can. But make sure you get insurance that covers the value and not just, you know, 10 cents a pound or whatever comes with the interstate moving.
You just reminded me of something when after my parents died. My brother and I, obviously moving things out, there were two very large old paintings in very old frames, for lack of a better term, and we wanted to move them. And I forget exactly, my brother took care of it, but he found somebody that specialized in crating things up like that.
Oh, sure.
And moving them.
Right.
Because they're too, either they're too financially and or have a huge sentimental value.
Right,
and
right.
It was worth it because, you know, they're heirlooms, so to speak.
Yeah, and maybe if it's valuable, take a picture before they put it on the truck so you can show that it was damaged at the other end, like you do with a rental car when you take it away from the rental car lot.
Yeah.
I take pictures now.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've been through that. All right, Herb, how do we avail ourselves of your expertise at checkbook.org?
Sure. Everything is on the website, checkbook.org, or you can go to my website, consumerman.com. It's all my checkbook stuff in one easy place. If you go and sign up for my weekly newsletter, my free newsletter, you'll find out everything I do, and you can write me questions. If you heard something on John's show and you want to know, I promise you I will answer you right away. And again, if you want the free ratings for the movers, checkbook.org/WGN radio/movers.
All right, Herb. Thank you so much. Another great time, and I look forward to the next time. Thanks.
Good, and happy 4th, John.
And the same to you.